Hey, from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out over Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And this week, we actually have a third comic
with us.
It's very exciting. We have a very special guest, our friend, Natty Bumper Carr.
Guys.
So, welcome, Natty.
Welcome to me. Welcome to you.
Man. Thank you for joining us. We're very happy you could join us.
I am so thrilled that you guys had me on, and I cannot wait to talk about whatever we're going to talk about.
Well, this...
You don't even know? You just showed up?
I just here. I just woke up, and I'm here. That's how it works.
You may know Natty from his own podcast, the Bumper... podcast. Did I get that right?
Just a bumper podcast.
Bumper podcast. Okay.
Yeah. And it's very stumbling for people.
It's a lot of syllables.
Is it?
Bumper podcast.
Rubber baby bumper podcast.
Bumper podcast.
Yeah. And it's just you talking about stuff, whatever's in your head for the week.
Not just me. It's everyone from Coffee Can Alley. So that's Rufus T. Rufus, who's our lawyer, who I wish wasn't on it. Doodle Poodle and Aloysius J. Pig.
I love Aloysius J. Pig.
He is a real treat. Sometimes my kids come on, like we put out an episode this week titled Emotions, and we talk all about emotions, which was kind of interesting.
Wow. Interesting. Good emotions, bad emotions.
Wow. All of the emotions.
Oh, you get deep. Wow.
We even made up some new emotions, like hungry, which is not an emotion.
That's
a feeling.
That's a feeling. Yeah. All right. Okay.
It's more than a feeling.
It's a feeling. Whoa.
More than a feeling.
So it's a good.
Oh, sorry.
Darren sings a lot.
I sing a lot.
He sings a lot on this show.
I have a song in my heart every time. I don't know. I'm just a very singy person.
I didn't know that.
Darren will burst into song at the drop of a hat.
I'm a one-man jukebox.
Yeah.
So Hawkins Middle School, is that what I think it is?
What? What do you think it is?
This is the t-shirt that Darren is wearing.
Yeah.
Is this, I should explain to people. A shirt where there's a teacher who has a mustache?
Yeah.
Okay.
There it is.
I'm not getting the reference. What is...
Stranger Things.
Stranger Things. Oh, well, I haven't watched most of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
So. Oh, you should. It's so good. I just finished season 3. It's so good.
Why are you not in the zeitgeist of what people are watching?
Because I'm busy watching old SNL movies this podcast. A new Quentin Tarantino movie opened up this weekend, but did I see it? No, because I'm watching Superstar starring Molly Shannon.
The movie we're talking about today, Superstar.
That was a good transition.
That actually was very good. Yeah, it came out. So the movie Superstar came out October 8th, 1999.
Did you know it had a $14 million budget?
Oh, really? I had $34
million. Wait, made $30.6 million, according to the wiki, but that it was made for $14
million. Really? How come I have $34 million?
Oh, my God. This is
falling apart already.
Wow. John, do you have numbers?
I was so busy getting you situated, I forgot to look up the usual things that I look up for the podcast.
Well, the movie was written by Molly Shannon and Steve Corin, who's an SNL writer who also wrote A Night at the Roxbury, and directed by the kid in the hall, Bruce McCullough.
Yes.
That I did not realize.
Ooh, there you go. Haha, I bested you.
Yeah.
All right. So while John looks up some facts, Natty, let's get into you. What is your history? Are you a Saturday Night Live fan? Are you a big fan? Not that big a fan?
I like Saturday Night Live fine.
Okay.
But I honestly have not really watched it in a long time.
No, that's fair. A lot of people kind of...
Not a regular watcher.
I mean,
if there's somebody you really like hosting, do you check it out?
I'll jump in for that. Okay. Yeah. And it's usually not live. I'll watch it on delay, or I'll go through and watch the clips online the next day or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there was a time in my life where I watched it a lot.
What was your era? Like 90s, 80s?
80s, 90s.
Okay. Do you have a favorite cast member at all?
So it's weird. Favorite cast member, I don't know, but I know favorite alum would be Bill Murray. But
of course.
Wonderful choice. He's one of our tops.
But for cast member, he was only there for like a year or two, right?
Yeah, he was...
Like 4 years.
Yeah,
Wait, really?
Yeah. He came on after Chevy Chase left. Chevy Chase left after the first season. Bill Murray was basically Chase's replacement, and then he...
Well, that's a jump up.
He stayed on until talent. Like... Most of the original cast left at the end of year 5.
Yeah. Oh,
all
right.
Yeah, medium talent.
You guys know all kinds of things.
We're SNL nerds, baby! It's in the title!
So when I was watching this movie, I was so stunned when the name came up and it was Molly Shannon and not Molly Ringwald. I really hoped...
You thought it was going to be Molly Ringwald?
In my heart, I was hoping, I feel like. Yeah, I don't know.
All right. I'm sorry it was a different Molly, but I mean, Molly Shannon's good too.
She's fine.
She's good. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Scathing indictment of Miss
Bumper
Shannon.
Car shade there.
I don't know. I mean, she seems like a wonderful person.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, as far as Manny Shannon goes, were you aware of this sketch, the Mary Catherine Gallagher sketch? Like, what were your feelings on it?
I was. I had seen it. I never loved it.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's understandable. It's kind of...
I was never a big fan either.
It's wow. The two of you.
I was...
It's pretty one note.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And one of the reviews I read of the movie, which I agree it goes into the sketch also, is it's hard to root for such an unlikable character.
Unlikable?
Was this a Roger Ebert review?
It was.
Yeah,
was
I read that this morning. Yeah.
And it made me think about SNL movies... And ones that I really didn't enjoy, like I didn't enjoy Night of the Roxbury. I didn't enjoy this. I didn't really enjoy Coneheads. And then I started thinking, well, which ones did I like? And it was like the Blues Brothers. I liked Wayne's World.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Wolf.
Those are usually regarded as the best.
Yeah, but it's because, partially at least, the characters are likable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're rooting for them.
You're pulling for them. Whereas this movie, the entire time she was on the screen, I was just like... don't feel like I'm watching this. I don't feel like I want to watch it. Like, I feel like this is someone who I should not... I feel like I'm objectifying someone who shouldn't be on my television.
Interesting. Uh-huh. I mean, I kind of felt that same way when we saw It's Pat, because It's Pat is way
same,
more...
Yeah.
Yeah. Pat is a horrible person.
Yeah.
Indiscriminate gender issues aside,
just
Pat is just a horrible person in that movie.
Yeah.
And who played Pat? I don't remember.
Julia Sweeney.
Okay.
Julia Sweeney.
But yeah, it was that movie was like, but I mean, I kind of like this movie a little bit more, and I kind of like the character a little bit more. I can't put my finger on why, though. There's something about her. Like, she has kind of like a, I guess, like Napoleon Dynamite, Tina Belcher from Bob's Burgers quality.
I think in the best possible version of this movie,
yeah,
it would have been like a Napoleon Dynamite. I could see that working.
Yeah.
And Napoleon Dynamite works for what it is.
Because he's an underdog that you root for. I hated that movie.
Even though he's very odd. And,
just so much, so full of hate.
What did you dislike about Napoleon Dynamite? I'm very curious.
It was trying so hard.
Yeah.
And
it was going out of its way to be quirky.
Yeah. From the get. Like, yeah. I just remember just being like, I checked out. And the same thing with this movie, but I think maybe you liked her more than Pat because there is a genuine quality to the character and she is really trying and going for it and she doesn't seem like a bad person.
Right.
She just seems off.
Yeah, that's her thing. Well, I mean, let's go back to the sketch. I mean, when this sketch came out, like, I was kind of okay with it because, like you guys said before, she is a little bit one note. Like, usually,
yeah.
And when the sketch came out, the sketch started off with her kind of bursting on to stage or something.
Has a lot of nervous energy.
Yeah.
She's this young Catholic schoolgirl who's not comfortable in her own body.
Yes.
Her own skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like very awkward. She's like very kind of soft-spoken and she you know, sticks her hands in her armpits when she gets nervous and smells them like her fingers. And then like she'll go off on like a kind of a tangent of like... She'll set. I don't know what happened. That was
Sell seashells.
I think Darren just had a stroke.
I think so.
Sure. He thinks he'll tart with a Tide salad.
Oi, go for nice. Wow, wee. That was nice.
That was Adam.
Yeah. But no, she'll go off and say some monologue from a TV movie. And she'll really get into it, and then she'll get like really hyper.
She's very exuberant, and
yeah. And then she like crashes into something. Like she'll crash into like a pile of chairs, or like through a wall. Like she'll really do it. Like she goes like Chris Farley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then like she goes superstar, and that's kind of the sketch, and it kind of repeats that same way.
The physicality of the character is interesting because Molly Shannon would really throw herself into it, like literally throw herself into chairs, and she's not really wearing any padding or anything, and she would get all bruised up. You could see like how bruised she was.
Yeah, there's sometimes like, legs. Oh my god, is she okay? It looked like oh.
I think that's a Chevy Chase thing where she that's an SNL like callback to like. The whole pratfalls and physical comedy and
and you didn't wear padding, you just started painkillers and got addicted to them and then had to go to Betty Ford. I mean that's the way they did it in the 70s.
In the movie when she was doing the whole chair thing, she did have knee pads on.
I noticed that.
Well,
why don't we dive into the movie? I'm going to read the summary on the back of the DVD case.
Ooh, all right.
So,
that's right, DVDs.
So we have a, but then we'll go through the movie more or less chronologically.
Oh, okay.
And talk about it. So Okay, here we go. Saturday Night Live star Molly Shannon brings her popular character Mary Catherine Gallagher to the big screen in this hilarious comedy romp.
Was popular in quotes there?
It was not.
Okay, just want to... Okay.
It was not.
False advertising?
All schoolgirl Mary Catherine Gallagher, Shannon, wants in life is a kiss. Not just any kiss, mind you. A big time, hold your breath till you think you're going to faint, Hollywood style kiss.
Ooh.
But no matter how hard she tries, no one will kiss her.
Mm.
Mary Catherine decides that the only way she's ever going to get what she wants is to become just like the people she sees getting those kisses in the movies. And when Catholic Teen Magazine sponsors a talent contest at her school, Mary Catherine just might make her dreams come true and become a superstar. Co-starring Will Ferrell, A Night at the Roxbury.
Yeah.
Because at the time...
That was his
this, yeah, this was written. This was 1999, so this is pre-Anchorman days.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess that was the biggest thing he'd ever done movie-wise.
That was, yeah. He was just, you know, making a start for himself.
Making his
movie.
Way in the world today.
So, yeah. So this movie stars Molly Shannon as Mary Catherine Gallagher, Will Ferrell at a bad wig as Sky, her love interest.
Sky Corgan.
Sky. Which I wrote down as Guy initially, but then I had to change it to Sky.
It has Elaine Hendricks, who you might remember from Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
That's where I met her.
As Evian. That's a much better movie where she plays a sort of...
like Mean Girl?
Mean Girl type person.
And her name, Evian, when I wrote it down the whole time in my head, I was like, that's intentional, right? And then it came back later. In the movie.
They made a joke about it.
Yeah.
But they made a joke.
I had that reaction a couple times. So I was like, is that intentional? Is that a joke? Or is that...
There were a lot of spots in this movie where I was like, was that a joke?
And let's say we also have Harlan Williams as Slater, who's the bad boy motorcycle guy.
Brooding.
And Slater, like...
That's like the kid from Saved by the Bell.
Yes. Like what?
It is not the what's his name who hosted
Mario Lopez.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lopez.
And also a young clean shaven Tom Green.
Yeah, they didn't.
That blew my mind.
In a bit part. Is this before Tom Green became famous?
No, this was
MTV?
When he was famous.
Okay.
This was like peak Green.
Really?
Yeah.
So why is Tom Green in this movie?
Because he's Tom Green.
A bit player?
Yeah, he has next to nothing to do. I mean, he is like basically an extra with lines.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, I mean, I guess they had him in there because at the time, that's when Tom Green was like at his peak. He was everywhere. So they're like, oh, let's put Tom Green in this movie. We'll get some people in the seats. But he doesn't do anything really. Like, he has that one scene
with the salad.
It's like, oh, you want some salad? And he's like pouring salad on his own face.
And in my head, I was like, Tom Green just did the worst improv I've ever seen. I think that the director was like, you know what? We're going to let Tom just wing this.
Let him go.
Let Tom be Tom. And he just kind of poured salad on his face and was like, huh, salad? And then that was it. And that's all. Yeah. And then he has like a few other lines where he calls people like, you know.
It's strange. It's strange. And
you said it. Because I
mumbled it. If you mumble it, it doesn't count.
We did the problematic, Bella. It's okay.
There's actually a whole section of the movie when we go to the other class.
But
where it was just like horrible stereotype, horrible stereotype, horrible stereotype.
Yeah. Yeah.
When she goes into the special ed class?
Yeah.
You mean?
Right. Yeah.
The
late
90s we can
get to that. I will say, when the movie started and it was Belinda Carlisle song, like immediately
It's Beautiful by the Go-Go's. Yeah, I looked it up.
I was okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, this is a fun way to start the movie. They're at a pool and
they're synchronized swimming.
Synchronized swimming, which the synchronized swimming took me back to. I don't remember what it was, but it was like some other. Was it Caddyshack? Wasn't there some pool something happening?
No,
but some movie in that era,
like a fantasy sequence where there's synchronized swimming.
Yeah, or like people in the pool doing something. I couldn't remember. I looked it up and I couldn't find what it was.
Muppets Take Manhattan.
Mm. I
feel like there was a swimming scene in the Muppets movie.
There's a swimming scene in The Great Muppet Caper.
There it is,
with Charles Grodin singing "Happiness, Miss Piggy."
That's what I was thinking about.
Happiness, Miss Piggy.
Oh, you nailed that.
Yeah, that was really impressive.
I watched that movie a lot as a kid.
Fantastic movie.
Here's
it's a lonely
another
childhood.
Thing that I looked up, but I couldn't find
Happiness
information
Hotel.
On. This movie started with intro credits.
Yeah.
And then I looked up. I was like, when did intro credits go away? Because it was like
they're kind of out of vogue, yeah.
Yeah, like
for a long time. Like,
Yeah.
That was the thing, like intro credits for a while, like back in the day. But now they do that thing where they don't show the title credits until like the end of the movie, and that became a thing for a while.
Yeah. But it's weird how the structure of that changes and why is that happening.
I don't know.
But you have the synchronized swimming. Mary Catherine Geller, she rescues a young boy from drowning.
Yeah, yep. when she was a kid, like 10 yeah. or something.
And it starts out with this flashback of her childhood, and then Mary Catherine Gallagher is narrating this, and she's basically just telling you all the character traits. It's like, it's such a lazy way to start your movie.
Yeah.
About the first 10 minutes, she's just like, this is who I am. This is what I want. This is ba 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 ba.
Yeah,
right. And it's, I was just like, this is so lazy.
It was exhausting.
I mean, it's just, show, don't tell.
Yeah.
Show, don't tell, Molly Shannon.
Yeah, so then they show Molly Shannon, not all grown up, but in high school, she lives with her grandmother.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
We're still the pool, and when she saves the kid who has the weird birthmark,
and
then she gets out of the pool, and it's her first version of saying superstar.
Right.
She goes, lifeguard, like that. But she does a little, it's a little girl, does a little thing.
That's so how you know it's her.
Yeah.
Because she carries those traits into, I'm going to say adulthood, because she apparently goes to a Catholic school that is populated solely by 30-year-olds.
Yeah, they all.
I wrote that down, too.
I was like, why is everyone in this Catholic school 30 years old?
I think you just kind of have to suspend disbelief for a little bit. It's like,
We
know they all.
There were crow's feet. I mean, they look older than
me. There's a scene late in the movie where Will Ferrell literally has 5 o'clock shadow.
Really?
Yeah.
It's
teenagers grow facial hair. It happens.
And we get further into her childhood, into, like, I guess her early adolescence, and Molly Shannon is playing Mary Catherine Gallagher now,
right?
And she's kissing Fonzie on screen.
Oh yeah, she kisses a lot of inanimate objects.
So she apparently grew up watching Happy Days, which means she's probably a Gen Xer. And she also later remembers the movie The Boy in the Plastic Bubble with John Travolta.
Yep.
That came out in 1976. But apparently the movie is taking place present day. So I maintain this movie is about 30-year-olds going to Catholic high school together.
Oh, interesting.
Now, this is
that Molly, is my take on the movie.
Molly Shannon, who grew up in Bessemer Heights in the movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Which in the ugliest house with the ugliest lawn and the ugliest dog.
Yes.
Her parents died in an accident.
Yeah.
And her family was accident prone. Her grandmother was also in an accident in a wheelchair.
This was a lot like Stuart Smalley's backstory in the Stuart Smalley movie, wasn't it?
A little bit.
Because a lot of accident prone relatives.
And people falling off roofs and whatnot. Yeah.
But I feel like it's another show, don't tell. Like, you know, like if you see, like, I don't know why I'm going to this, but like a Pee Wee movie where they just show you the craziness of the house. Like, you don't have to be like, it was the ugliest house with the ugliest lawn with the ugliest dog. I saw the
dog. It's just this big info dump at the beginning, and it's just not interesting.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then, where's she? She's at St. Monica's?
Yes.
And we get the first, this is another weird thing the character does, is she likes to lift her skirt. And
if
you ever wanted to see a movie with, like, just Molly Shannon flashing granny panties for
constantly
half the runtime,
fellas,
this is the movie for you.
It got a little awkward. I was like, I know she's of age, but I was like, I feel like I should be watching.
So I thought about that too. That, like, there's a lot of stuff in the movie where I was like, these are supposed to be teenagers.
Yeah,
I don't
feel
comfortable watching this.
Yeah,
and it's not meant to be like titillating or anything like that. It's just to be humorous because, like, she's very awkward and all that. But it's not really funny enough to be.
Yeah, like there's that one scene where they have Avion in the locker room, and she's there, and like they're all her and like Avion's sort of flunkies or friends behind her. They're all dressed in. They show them in, like, bra and panties, and I was like, oh, this feels...
Yeah,
and then there's glowing boobs.
Yeah.
There's a close-up of Elaine Hendrix's breasts in her bra, and, yeah, they put a little computer glowing effect on them, because Mary Catherine Gallagher wants boobs like her.
Bigger
But there was an interesting thing with that, where there were a couple times in the movie where Mary Catherine Gallagher was, like, staring hard at her, but it was in a longing kind of way, I felt. I don't know if you got that
like
vibe.
Like a repressed lust kind of way?
Yeah. I don't know.
You think there was some lesbian subtext, perhaps?
Maybe. I don't know.
Some same sex attraction.
Because she went
up. Wild things.
In that scene, she even like flicked her bra.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. She was like, oh my.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, but there were a few different things where I was just like, huh. All right. This is interesting subtext.
I think she's just trying to discover herself, man.
She's desperate too. Well, speaking of discovering herself,
Summer of Love.
She was walking around the school, and these were some of the names that they screamed out at her.
Oh,
there was Lesbo, Dog Face, Nipple Hair.
I like that one. Yeah,
it was strange.
That's very creative.
Yeah,
it's
clever.
Loser, which is also very
generic.
Yeah,
and her turn on this, and I got so annoyed because I was like, "This is your chance to make a Hollywood movie. You're from SNL,
right?
You've evidently been doing comedy or something like it for a long time."
Right.
Her retort
was evidently been doing comedy or something like it.
I hope Molly Shannon doesn't listen to this.
Wow.
Well, so her retort was, "I'm rubber, you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off me and sticks to you."
Like, right.
This is your chance to say something witty. You're not even in the moment. Like, somebody's writing this for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Have them write something interesting.
I mean, you're playing a kid who might not be real witty or anything like that, but you are an adult person writing a screenplay.
Yeah. So I understand your structure of, your character is not witty, but you're supposed to be making a comedy.
Yeah. There was so much in this movie I was just like, like, even in the movies that we've covered before that I didn't like, there were things I recognized as jokes, even if I didn't find them funny as jokes. So much of this movie, I was just like, is that a joke? I don't know.
Huh.
Like, okay, after Mary Catherine Gallagher is put into the special ed class.
Right.
We meet all the other special ed kids in there. And there is a kid in there named Howard Feinstein.
Okay.
A Jewish name in the Catholic school.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
And they don't even make a thing out of it. And so I'm just genuinely perplexed. I'm like, is that a joke? Are we just supposed to laugh that there's a kid with a Jewish name in the Catholic school? They didn't make anything more of it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, did they just genuinely not know?
I didn't even get that until you just said it. It's like, why is he here?
Yeah.
Huh.
I think there was a lot of stuff where I would catch myself thinking that along the lines, and then I would go, maybe this is operating at a much higher level than I'm at right at this second.
No, I don't think
but
it was.
But then I would come back, and I was like, no, it's definitely not.
No, no. Yeah, I was just like, that perplexed me, because I was like, if you're gonna make that gag, make it a bigger gag. Like, put in a half dozen Jewish kids, or exaggerate the Jewishness of his name more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is Feinstein Schwartzberg.
Schwartzbergerbaum.
I mean, really make it
over the top Jewish
Schmoll name. Bergerbaumberg.
Yeah, and you know, give him a yarmulke. Give him a
just make him a whole stereotype.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're gonna do it, yeah.
Yeah. Make him Orthodox Jew.
Yeah. I mean, have him hold, dreidels and what have you.
Yeah.
And a menorah.
We find out that Skye Corrigan is dating and in love with Evian of the Glowing.
That's right. Yeah. Will Ferrell's character and Elaine Hendrix's character.
And so she is the head cheerleader.
Yeah. Popular girl. Skye Corrigan's a popular jock guy who also likes to dance and is a big dancer.
Big dancer. Well, yeah.
Yeah. He's, people like to dance. Dance.
And I think this is our first time when, other than the TV, where Mary-Kate is kissing the tree outside.
Yeah, she makes out with a tree like hardcore outside.
Just that was something Roger Ebert noted in his review. He was like, it's a funny sounding idea, but you're just really watching an actress make out with a tree.
Yeah.
And it's a little too literal to really be funny.
Yeah, and then the nun is behind her, and then that's kind of...
And then she's like, gets all, all embarrassed, like, oh, I'm sorry. And then
Like, it would be funnier if it was like a literal cartoon, because then you could push it a little further, you know?
Yeah, maybe the branches wrap around. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
So here's some hot tree-on-tree action.
A weird thing is, in the scene with the tree, there were two old-school beetle bugs. Volkswagen beetle bugs.
Oh, yeah, right about that.
Yeah. This is apparently a motif in the movie. I was reading this on the IMDb trivia page.
There is. I didn't read about it.
Yeah.
But these were two old-school beetle bugs.
Right.
Then throughout the movie, there's two green beetle bugs that are shown numerous times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was also thinking that. I was just like, is this sponsored by Volkswagen? Is this some weird joke?
Yeah.
And then I was like, why are there the new bugs and the old bugs? What year are we in? I couldn't.
On the IMDb trivia page, one of the items here is, and I don't know if I agree with this, it says, a green VW bug can be seen in the background of any outdoor scene, sometimes multiples in a single scene. This is a possible reference to Bullet, the Steve McQueen movie. During the climactic chase scene, a green VW bug is about the only car that can be seen over and over again driving through the streets.
But why reference Bullet? What does that have to do with that?
I don't know. See, yeah. I mean, if it's a reference to Bullet, it's an out-of-the-blue reference to Bullet.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's no connective tissue there.
It's like...
And I
is Bruce McCullough a fan of Steve McQueen?
McCullough McQueen?
Is there a connection?
Does it, I mean, do Volkswagen Beetles have some special meaning for Molly Shannon or Bruce McCullough? I don't know.
Or was it just a $14 million budget and they only had two green bugs that they could put in and they decided that, they could joke?
That sounds probably it. That's probably it. Literally the same VW bug we see throughout the movie.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, so so Molly Shannon, because she's very hyperactive and, you know, it was a problem, she gets put into a special ed class with full of other, you know, misfits and what have you. There's like a goth girl, there's a kid who has OCD and says the same thing five times, and she becomes friends with Helen, who kind of looks like Kenny from The State, but isn't. Mm-hmm. And so she
does look like a Carrie Kenny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out who that was.
No, I don't think it was anyone. I can look up the cast list. Give me a minute.
Wait, did you say there's a homophobic guy?
Oh, yeah. That's Howard.
Howard. What? Okay.
Yeah. He thinks he's the guy. He's like very overconfident, thinks all the women and the guys want him. And he says, you know, to like a guy, hey, stop looking at me. I don't play butt darts.
And when he was doing all that stuff, I was just like, butt darts. Oh, I wonder if this guy's going to come out as gay later on.
Was the name of her friend? The one with the braces?
The basketball player?
Helen, yeah.
Helen? Okay.
She's like the tall basketball player with braces.
Emily Laybourne played Helen.
Okay. I don't know.
Okay.
And yeah. Let's see. She is a novelist, screenwriter, and former character actress. Oh, so she has given up acting after this movie.
Said goodbye to the game.
She was also in Mystery Men.
That movie's underrated.
The remake of The In-Laws.
There was a remake of The In-Laws?
Yeah. Yeah. With Michael Douglas and someone else.
Okay.
Who I'm forgetting.
All right. Well, there you go.
And she was in the TV show Dag.
Dag.
Which I don't.
Is that like one of those?
I was thinking about Jag, but it's not.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
It had. Let's.
Well, we are digressing.
Yeah. It had David Alan Grier in it.
Oh, David Alan Grier, Dag.
Yeah.
Dag.
Hey.
Following an embarrassing blunder, the president's top secret service agency is reassigned to the first lady and has to contend with her eccentric staff. Okay. And it lasted one season in 2000-2001.
David Alan Grier.
Oh, boy.
Doesn't get his due.
Rest in peace. He's not even dead. I don't know why he said that.
No, she had kind of a brief career. It only lasted from 97 to... Well, no, her most recent credit is 2014 in the Michael J. Fox show.
There you go. Oh, she's still doing stuff. There you go.
She's still out there. So.
Yeah, keep on keeping on.
So,
all right. So, yeah. So, this is the special ed class. And also in the special ed class is this guy Slater, played by Harlan Williams, who is... It's weird because like Harlan Williams is like a comedian, but he doesn't have anything funny to say in this movie. He plays it pretty straight.
He plays it very, very straight, and he doesn't have anything to say because that's part of his character.
Yes, he's silent throughout like a good portion of the movie. He's like the brooding bad boy. He always wears leather jackets.
If you're going to be like silent, don't also be stoic and brooding, because then we don't have any. There's nothing to read from him.
Yeah.
His character disappears for like a good 40 minutes of the movie, and when he comes back again in the last half of the movie, I was like, I literally forgot Harlan Williams was in this.
It's interesting. Oh, and also Mary Catherine Gallagher, she had the job, which isn't around anymore, but she had the job at the video store rewinding video. She's a rewind girl.
Right.
Which explains how she knows like so many quotes from so many movies, because she spent a lot of time
watching
movies.
I started
marking
down how many monologues she did, and I really hated the monologues. And I also was noting the fantasy scenes that would happen.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But when Harlan Williams' character came into the classroom, I honestly thought that he was a new teacher or something like that.
He looks like Well, it's hard to tell because all the students are 30 years old.
Yeah. So I was just like, oh, this must be the new cool teacher who's going to help Mary Kay be like the...
See, that sounds like a much more interesting movie.
Is it Kay or Kate? Mary Kate.
Mary Catherine.
Mary Catherine. Mary Catherine. Okay. With a K, according to the back of the DVD case.
That's what throws me off. So then we go into a science class where I thought there was a little visual joke that was another like... It was on screen for maybe 2 seconds, but it was a little diorama of the universe with, I think it was the sun in the middle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wait, no, wait. Jesus was in the middle.
Jesus was like orbiting the Earth, I think.
Maybe that was
Or the Earth was orbiting Jesus.
But there was a big statue of Jesus.
Yeah.
And it was a cute, quick little thing.
Yeah. It's science right there.
Yeah. That's just science.
And speaking of Jesus, we have Will Ferrell pop up as Jesus.
Yes, he plays two roles in this film.
Yeah.
He pops up as... So Mary Catherine Gallagher goes to sleep, and she has like a dream about Jesus.
Yep. Yeah.
Who appears before her and encourages her.
Yeah, to get jiggy with it.
And yes, she's, I don't understand what that means.
I think, yeah, that was weird. Like, it's, you can tell, like, the year this came out, because, like, they would throw in a lot of things to that were just popular in that year.
Right,
yeah.
Like, at one point, they do an Armageddon parody.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, they're doing the movie Armageddon. Oh, right, yeah, I guess that was out around this time.
Yeah, it was just so
bizarre. For no reason, like, half the cast, they're in the orange spacesuits, and they're all marching forward in that right stuff style
shot.
And what
did they sing? Did they sing, like, an Aerosmith song?
No, they sang Leaving on a Jet Plane, which they sing in Armageddon.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
Natty's done.
I'm just
Natty's done.
I wanted to like it. And I kept on, with all the Catholic stuff, I kept on trying to go back to Blues Brothers.
Because
that was such a huge influence with the church and everything.
Sure.
And I was like, no, it's going to have some connective nothing.
No.
Nothing.
Yeah.
No.
But so after the classroom scene with the diorama, we actually get, she's outside with her friend Helen, and there's a giant sign.
Uh-huh.
And it's like throughout the movie, there's like, kind of milestones where you're like,
this is where she finds out about the contest.
This is the point of the movie now.
Yeah. This is the plot.
Yeah.
Finally, we're introducing a main plot point 30 minutes in.
Yeah, we're at least
of an 82 minute movie.
Yeah.
An 82. This is not a long movie.
No, it's
ladies
pretty
and
short.
Gentlemen.
It felt long.
It felt about 900 years long.
Damn, the two of
you. So, and this was another joke that they kept on pushing. Was that if you win the big talent show, you get to have a part in a Hollywood movie.
A cameo.
But the movie has positive moral values.
Right.
And that was, they've said that phrase probably 10 times. Like, this is going to get a hit. And every time we say it, it's going to keep building and building.
Yeah.
He said positive moral. Stop.
Yeah. It's a running gag. It doesn't really go anywhere. So
no, I mean, because, well, spoilers, she wins the contest at the end.
What are you doing?
What?
But
I have five more pages.
No, we'll get back to it. We'll get back to it.
They're going to stop listening to the podcast right now.
Yep.
Okay, fine. Thanks for listening. Maybe she doesn't win the contest.
All right. There you go.
But,
show, don't tell.
We never find out what the movie is, what type of movie it is.
Yeah, I thought they'd be like a...
They don't do anything else with that. They just say it like that in itself is a joke.
Yeah, I thought they'd be like a cameo of a movie star who would be in that movie, but it just kind of...
At the end, like Charlie Sheen comes in and is the star of the movie.
He's just done lots
of cocaine or something.
I would have seen that. That would have been a great Superstar 2, where she actually goes to Hollywood.
Superstar.
And then it's, ooh.
Saw that?
Always, I see what you did there.
Always thinking.
But it would have been a great Little Mouse, Big City type thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Corrupted by Hollywood, and where does she go, and whatever. So, but her friend Helen says that, I don't know if Sky or she was the swaziest. Which I liked that. I'd never heard someone say about the dancing.
I like
you're the swaziest.
I've heard swaziest as an adjective. It was on Mystery Science Theater 3000 when they did the Let's Have a Patrick Swayze Christmas.
This
could be the swaziest Christmas.
Yeah, well then maybe.
So I can't even give the movie credit for that.
Wow.
How long ago was that though?
That was sometime in the 90s. It was definitely before 99 because it was a Joel episode, and Joel left the show 93. Right. So yeah, they were way ahead of the curve.
Because I remember in the 90s, the word Swayze was used as a verb, like in hip hop. It'd be like, yo, I'm Swayze. That means like you were leaving. You're out.
Wow.
Which is like, you know, because they just say, yo, I'm Ghost.
Yeah.
And like Swayze wasn't Ghost. So instead of saying, oh, I'm Ghost, you say, oh, I'm Swayze.
That's the
And then in the Lazy Sunday, they say we ghost like Swayze.
Yeah, they said that a lot. Like in the 90s.
Is there any kind of vocabulary that Patrick Swayze has not been?
I don't think so.
He's been an adjective. He's been a verb. I'm assuming he's normally a noun.
You would think.
That is impressive.
Is an adverb?
He's
Swayzily.
Constant.
Oh, I like that.
Swayzily.
Yeah.
You did that quite Swayzily.
So we have our point to the movie, which is a talent show.
Yeah.
And then immediately we have our. Not our big bad, but our roadblock that our person has to overcome.
Right.
Our main protagonist in that grandmother says no to the talent show.
Right, what? She wants you to be like an accountant or something.
Businesswoman.
Yeah,
right.
I don't know if she says businesswoman or business person.
I don't know.
And
her grandmother is at home. She's like in a wheelchair.
Yes,
and she uses one of those chair lifts to go up the stairs.
Which I think that was supposed to be a joke also. I guess because back in the 90s, those chairs...
Just the fact of using that was supposed to be hilarious.
Yeah.
Because I mean, remember those commercials.
Yeah, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Yeah,
for some reason, that was funny. I mean...
The chairlifts can be funny. I mean, like, AP Bio used a chairlift recently in the last couple of years, and that's very funny. But you have, like, young people using it, young able-bodied people using it when they don't have to. And that's funny. Here, it's just an old person using it.
Yeah,
and
it's like, it's just doing what it's supposed to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, get it? She's using it the way it's supposed to be used.
She's using that thing for its intended purpose.
Comedy gold.
Yeah.
All right. But so, yeah, so then Mary Catherine really wants to do the talent show because she figures if she wins, she'll be a star and she'll get her first kiss.
Then
we're going up from there.
She's gonna get Skye to kiss her. Yeah.
Oh, and there's a big cafeteria dance scene.
Well, yeah, we're not even there.
Are we not there yet?
No, because we're at they're in church.
Because I mean, this movie didn't have much of a plot, so I'm trying to. I'm really having trouble remembering the order in which things happen in this movie.
So this is when they're in church, and her and Helen are talking about the talent show.
Right, and they had like a little dream sequence.
They had an imagination scene, they called it, it was Supermodel Something Hour.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so weird and just so...
Yeah, they were pretending to be like supermodels at a fashion shoot, and they would speak in like fashion model...
Where should we look? How should we do?
And just felt like Molly Shannon wants to do a different character. Now,
yeah, it was just it's kind of like a throwaway little scene.
Yeah,
it didn't add to the plot or anything. It was just like,
no,
let's just put this in here.
And like, I'm all for tangential random comedy.
Yeah,
but no, we don't care for that.
No, you stick to the formula.
That's right.
Really? How many?
No, we never go on tangents.
Never,
on the show.
Ever
at all.
Nope.
A little bit.
Never.
No. A tiny bit.
Ever.
Tangents.
Never been done.
No.
Nope.
What's a tangent?
Nope. Nope. So anyway, like Patrick Swayze vocabulary.
Wow.
Huge comedy.
And then we go, she's sitting in her little Rewind Girl movie, the little room.
Her booth.
And who shows up?
Yeah. And by the way, I used to work in a video store. As far as I know, that is not and has never been a position. That we did not have a separate room where people dump videotapes down slides so you can just exclusively rewind them. We had a little machine, you could rewind them, and then you go and do other things.
Yeah, why do you need to watch it in order for it to be to see if it's been rewound properly?
This movie has a conceptual hole at the center of it.
Now, hold on, because I'm saying, I'm going to devil's advocate.
Ooh.
They invented a job for her that enabled her to... explain why she does the monologues by watching all the old. So I was fine with that.
Yeah.
And she seems like the kind of person they would put in a back room to do this job.
Okay.
Yeah, I think putting her in a back room, that's a good call.
So here's the weird thing, too. The boss, you never see. You only see torso and hands.
Yeah, that's a weird thing, too.
Yeah, just an off-screen voice.
And no reason for that, either.
No.
Unless it was
there's no reveal of the boss or anything.
Yeah, it's not like, John Candy. Not John Candy. He's been dead.
John Forsythe as Charlie on Charlie's Angels?
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah. But I didn't know if that was kind of like a Charlie Brown, like we hear the adults, but we don't see them. But there were plenty of adults that we saw in the movie, so that discredited that. So
I mean, the grandmother was an adult.
It's true.
Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, that was weird. It's just kind of like, why are you choosing to do that?
But this is where your boy in the plastic bubble comes up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Do we know who's... How many of their favorite movie was it that in the list of movies?
Oh, like it was like, oh, it's my 19th favorite movie.
Oh, it's my 19th favorite movie, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, actually, did you say it was Guy Corgan looking for that movie?
Yeah.
I don't know if I said that.
Yeah.
I did.
Will Ferrell's character, Skye, comes in looking for the movie.
And so they actually have a little connection.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like, oh, do you go to my school and all that type, whatever.
Yeah. It's like, oh.
And also like one of the gags in the movie, they're pretending like the Will Ferrell's like the real hunky guy.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody's turned on by Will Ferrell, and that's usually a joke in Will Ferrell movies, but they make it a more over the top joke.
Yeah, everybody's
like when Will Ferrell's shirtless or something, and he's got like I guess what you could call a dad bod or just a very average person's build.
Shlubby.
And they act like he's this Adonis, and here it's just Will Ferrell in a bad wig, and it's not really they don't really take it far enough for it to be.
To be
as funny as it usually is.
It's just like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing.
No, they played a lot of things straight in hopes that the humor would come from the straightness, I guess.
It's oddly understated for a comedy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like they could have, for as ridiculous of a comedy as it is, I feel like it's understated, and I feel like they would have been better served to actually feed in and live in the wackiness of it.
Right.
She's kissing a tree. This is wacky.
Right,
like,
right,
or
whatever. Right.
Like, instead of, yeah. like, I don't
if they
know.
Went a little more exaggerated, a little more surreal, or...
Maybe that's what it is that I have the problem with. Maybe it's because, since it was all played so straight and so real, it made me uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like a cringe comedy, but it wasn't, like, cringe, but it was, like, right. just huh? uncomfortable. An uncomfortable comedy.
Uncomfortable.
You just coined a new word.
Uncomfortable comedy.
Uncomfortable comedy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Copyright.
Yeah.
Copyright that, right?
Copyright bumper car.
I got the Twitter there.
Nice. Right.
So then we're in the lunchroom, and we get the Sloppy Joseph reference, which was just...
Get it?
Yeah. It's just not a Sloppy Joe. It's a Sloppy Joseph.
You know, again, is that a joke?
May? I have to assume it's... it. Just because it's said in a comedy movie, I have to assume it's a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it is if you want it to be, it's a joke.
Anything can be a joke if you want it to be. And then we get Tom Green's salad improv.
Yeah, he like kind of puts salad on his own. It's like, oh, you want some salad? And while he's teasing the misfits, it's like, what's from town? And then that's kind of... That's
I don't
the
think
funny
I even remember that, honestly.
And then they flashed away from... Because like, I think the cameraman was like, there's nothing here.
Like, the cameraman just gets depressed and pans away.
Yeah, there's...
Oh, God, I'm leaving.
This is not my...
Yeah, I'm not going to subject audience members to this.
My wife is right. This isn't
right. What am I doing with my life? This is...
The cameraman had a crisis of conscience and just... the camera just
goes to the floor. Yeah. And then you just get static.
What am I doing with my life?
But then we do get our third imaginary scene. This is what you were talking about earlier, the lunchroom dance scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Flash mob.
Which I loved. I loved that 30 seconds because...
That was cute.
It really did remind me of the Blues Brothers.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So yeah. They're all danced to a CNC Music Factory, Gonna Make You Sweat.
Yep.
Parentheses, everybody dance now.
Oh, good.
That is how it's credited in the closing credits.
Oh, all right.
I had it in my notes as just everybody dance now.
Yeah.
And then I looked at the closing credits and I was like, oh, I was wrong. My life is a lie.
Wow. Oh, no.
And,
weren't there two songs?
From CNC Music Factory?
Well, no, with that same...
With the same dance scene?
Yeah, no.
Oh, you thought they were like recreating a dance scene?
No, there were two songs and it was like that CNC... I'll have to look it up.
I mean, they did do like something like that in Old School where they danced to Everybody Dance Now. Is that what you're thinking about?
No, there were two songs that came out within 2 months of each other, and they were the same basic song. One was CNC Music Factory, and one was
like the same bass line or something that like they sounded really alike.
Kind of the same song is what I remember, but I don't remember.
All right, Nandy's going to go on his phone and figure this out. Yeah. We're going to get to the bottom of this, ladies and gentlemen.
We're going
to
crack this case wide open.
That's right.
I'm trying to think. I mean, it was Snap the Power, but this is
that's it.
That's it.
Snap. Yeah.
I got the power,
but it's the same same background music, right?
Not really.
Like the same sample or something?
I got the power.
It was very similar. I don't remember. In my head.
Sort of.
Okay. All right. Who cares? Nobody cares. We're talking about the movie.
All right.
If anybody from the early 90s in MTV want to chime in on this, please give us a call.
And then we get to another spot that's a couple of minutes long. That's another one of these. Is this a joke? And this is where the priest is eating toast that's burnt.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And they really held on that for a long time, and I was like, something funny is probably
going to
happen.
It's a lot of Mark McKinney eating toast.
Yeah, yeah. Like it just, and then they turn the camera, and you have the nuns all standing there, and then it's back to him, and he's eating toast. He's
like
having
burnt toast.
Burnt toast.
Very dry, burnt to a crisp.
Having a tough time, and then something is asked about the talent show.
Yeah,
there's some nuns waiting there, and he's just like, is the good toaster broken?
No,
and that's,
he says, I'm not going to point any fingers.
Right.
But... About who broke the good toaster.
Right.
Or something like that. Yeah, it was just...
It's just a very random kind of thing.
It seemed like a very... Like, almost a Kid in the Hall type of thing, but not...
Well, I mean, it's starring a Kid in the Hall, and it's being directed by another Kid in the Hall. And it's... But it's like... Mark McKinney, he can do funny bits.
Right.
I mean, we saw last week when we watched Night at the Roxbury, where he had a funny bit as the priest at the end, where he's like negotiating another job
on his big Zach Morris phone.
Yeah,
yeah, wheeling and dealing
during the wedding ceremony. And
you could argue that the kids in Hall are pretty funny.
I would say so. I would say
there is precedent for that.
However, maybe they're not funny in movies because Brain Candy was not. Well,
not a successful movie.
And yeah.
No.
I don't think even the kids in the hall were happy with Brain Candy.
I think when people from short,
doing short sketches.
Short sketches, that's the word I want to thank you. When you try to expand it into a large movie, you find out it's not as easy as it looks.
No. Yeah. Well, because in a movie, you need like actual story structure. You need a beginning, middle, and end, and you need characters
character
who want
development
things.
And
yeah, and you need the character to change over the course of the movie.
That's true.
Usually, I mean, sometimes there's humor in if they remain utterly unchanging, but
yeah, that's true. I mean, did you ever see Reno 911, either the TV show or the movie?
Love the TV show a lot. A lot, but I never saw the movie.
Yeah, it was.
I thought the movie was pretty good. Reno 911
well,
Miami.
Yeah, that's another thing too. Yeah. Is the state people? I love them.
Yeah,
like,
they're great.
A lot. Like Stella, I loved. Like you want to talk about what was it?
Michael have issues.
Uncomedy. Yeah.
Uncomfortably. We forgot our own phrase we coined. Son of a
rewind soul. Back to that. Yeah. And,
but, I mean, like, Stella was built on that.
Yeah.
Like, awkward pauses and weird silences and, like, just and tangential stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, this movie, like, it's just so one note and so show, don't tell. And it's just... It made me so sad.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
We're almost done here. We'll bring you out of the sadness.
And also, like, here's another weird thing. This might be the place to mention this. Evian, Mary Catherine Gallagher's nemesis character, she's bulimic.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to find that funny. At one point, she's just puking.
Yeah.
And, the gag is just, she's bulimic.
She's eating Bugles. And then she says, hold on, guys, I don't feel good. And then she goes and throws up and then comes back.
Yeah.
And then... Yeah. Will Ferrell's he
breaks up with her.
Well, yeah, he pops into the call.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he breaks up with her after he sees
the fight.
Like Evian and Mary get into like this huge fight, and Will Ferrell's character Sky sees Evian like really berating her, telling y'all that your parents are dead, and like really going below the belt. And that turns Sky off, and then he...
Oh, by the way, do we find out how Mary Catherine Gallagher's parents died?
Not yet. Hold on to that chestnut.
Because nothing in this movie has any cause and effect, really, so...
No, it's just we're going to explain a little bit more as the movie goes on.
It's just 82 minutes of stuff that happens.
So the cheerleaders had little crosses on their skirts, which I thought was adorable, because I went to a Catholic high school.
Okay. I also did notice that the cheerleaders, because it's St. Monica's High School, the initials in their shirts said SMH. Which is shake my head.
Back then it wasn't, though.
It wasn't.
No, it was 1999.
I know, it wasn't back then, but I look at it now, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I was doing a lot of shaking my damn head during this movie. I was just like,
no. And the fight scene, it was another uncomfortable thing to watch. Like, I don't feel like they had a choreographer for, like, thing. It was just
kind of
like...
No, that cost money.
Yeah,
we got a budget.
Get the craft services guy to come show you how to fight. I don't know.
Tell the guy making panini to show her how to throw a punch.
Oh, speaking of the budget, according to Wikipedia, the movie had a budget of $14 million.
Where'd I get 34?
Okay. You did a great job.
It made $30 million, a little
30.6.
Yeah, 30.6.
Okay, well, that's
it made money.
So you did a great job.
So where'd I get 34?
It actually was more profitable than Night at the Roxbury, because Night at the Roxbury, it made about the same amount of money, but Night at Roxbury had a $17 million budget, so this was slightly more profitable.
This is
like a weird thing. Like nowadays, if a movie like Solo came out and it made like $600 million or whatever it was,
right?
And they said that's a flop, and it's
partly because Solo was basically shot twice,
yes.
But I'm saying like it still made $150 million,
exactly.
Which you would think like movie theaters or studios would be like, that's great. But back then, they were happy to make $14 million or whatever it is, and it's just like that's
kind of disappeared. You don't see like comedies being made for like such a low budget anymore.
No,
and, like those mid.
Yeah, not these days. It's all reboots and remakes and da-da-da. All right, so so Sky breaks up with Evian, and she's devastated, and she tries to get him back, and I think now Helen talks to Mary, saying, "Oh, now's your chance to get with Sky and get that kiss, because he said you had nice moves that one time he saw you dance."
Yep.
So if you have nice moves, that means he was looking at your body, which means he thinks you're hot. So he's basically inviting you to have sex with him.
Yeah. And all that.
Flawless logic.
Flawless
logic.
Story checks out.
And then I think we have another fantasy scene where she ends up kind of... No, we don't have a fantasy. Or do we? But she ends up latching herself onto him.
I think she actually did that, right?
Yeah, but I think to lead up to that, because what would happen is a lot of times she would have these fantasy scenes and she would find herself, like there was in the lunchroom, where she was dancing, and he was like, "What are you doing?" kind of thing, like, because her real actions were bleeding into the real world.
Oh yeah,
I don't know.
Okay, I don't know. I kind of remember that.
I think we skipped over John's big reveal.
Well, what was that?
The Harlan Williams thing?
The grandmother came to the school.
Oh, yeah.
And said, you know, "What are you doing to my granddaughter?" And my granddaughter is a star. And then Mary kind of took that as, my grandmother thinks I'm a star. So that night she goes home and she's like, "I want to be in the audition." Grandmother's like, "Nope." She's like, "But you said I was a star."
Yeah.
And then the big...
Then the big reveal.
We have a flashback where the grandmother explains that Mary Catherine Gallagher's parents were stomped to death in a step dancing competition, an Irish step, like river dance.
Remember when river dance was the thing?
Yeah, where the upper part of your body is not moving, but you're stamping and dancing all around, and
your feet are all flopping about.
They played the music too fast, so everybody started stomping.
Somebody bumped into the record player.
Right, somebody bumped into the record player. Foreshadowing, remember that. Mm. Everybody's like starts dancing at a faster tempo, and then her parents fall off the stage, and then they're stomped to death by the people dancing.
Thrown on the other people.
Yeah.
And so the original story was that the parents were eaten to death by hammerhead sharks.
Right. And she's and the grandma said, "Yeah, I just told you that to make you feel better."
Yes, but hold on to the hammerhead shark thing, and also just to go back for a second, when her grandmother again says, "You're not going to audition," this is another amazingly uncomfortable scene because Mary runs upstairs screaming, "You're horrible! You're horrible!" as she's going up the stairs, and then she slams her door. I want to say 15 times, "Horrible!
You're
right.
You're horrible.
That's right.
You're
right."
You're horrible.
The rule is
kept. It wasn't rule of three.
Rule of 15.
Yeah,
it was one of those things that was supposed to be like, you know, funny at first, and then you do it so many times it becomes unfunny, and then you do it so many more times it becomes funny again. But it didn't quite.
Yeah, I was just like, this makes me uncomfortable. There's a lot of me feeling uncomfortable watching this movie.
Yeah, no, I think that is the correct reaction.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, so.
By the way, when do you have to audition for a high school talent show?
I think to show up.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to think. I think there were.
I remember in my high school we had like a talent or variety show thing, and it was basically if you wanted to be in it, you were in it. I don't remember in any sort of audition process.
Just like a sign up sheet, like a mic.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Just like show
just
up. With
put your name.
You show up. You buy one item and
you buy a drink. You get ready.
You
for
do your 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And,
it's like, I'm getting the light. All right, I gotta go. Yeah, and you walk off stage, and you're like, all right, that worked out.
Again, so many conceptual holes at the center of this movie.
Yeah. It seems like
auditioning for high school talent shows, rewinding the videotapes, and...
I think there were. I don't remember. I don't know. I never tried
that was just something I started wondering during the movie, because the movie was not entertaining me. So you started thinking about that,
you were wandering a little bit.
Yeah, my mind is desperately seeking stimulation of some kind.
Right. So Mary goes Mary goes against her grandma's wishes. She auditions. She sings "Sometimes When We Touch" by Dan Hill,
"Sometimes When We Touch."
It's a great song, and it turns out that she does well. But Avion has like a trick up her sleeve. You know, she recreates Carrie moment where she has like a can of blue paint over her and she pulls the string and
This was a callback to earlier in the movie.
Oh yeah,
she Mary Kate was having what looked like a conniption, like it was almost like a seizure, like her eyes were going like she was like, grandma's like, "What's wrong with you?" And she was like, "I'm trying to use my psychic powers to kill this girl."
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then grandma goes, "Oh, okay."
Yeah. Like nothing.
It's no reaction.
It feels like there's so many, and we keep saying it, but there were so many times in the movie where it's just like, "Hey, I'm going to set this up. Do you want to knock it out of the park?" "No, that's okay. I'm just going to knock it on the ground." You know what? I might not even swing at it. I might just walk away and not acknowledge that the ball is there.
There's no yes ending. There's just let it lay there.
There's
We are creating so many new phrases today.
Meh is wonderful. that's our improv trick.
Oh, copyright that.
Yes, meh.
And so Mary gets blue paint on her, and everybody laughs at her. She, you know, except her friend, and she feels so embarrassed, just runs out. and she sees Slater on a motorcycle looking all badass.
Yeah. This is where I was like, oh yeah, Harlan Williams was in this movie.
Yeah.
And they did that a lot because he was the bad boy on his motorcycle.
Leather jacket.
And they drive off to Sister Christian.
Yes.
Sister Christian, now the time.
You know, and now I'm just wishing I'm watching Boogie Nights.
Oh, nice.
I was like, well, I wish there was a small Asian boy setting off firecrackers in the background.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, well, at all times.
Yeah.
But I'm a star, the thing I'm a star, that, I'm a star.
So the reason Slater didn't talk, the reason they set up was because the story was that he had cut his parents up with a knife and killed them.
Right. Mm-hmm. So everybody and stayed away from him, and Mary was like very afraid of him throughout the movie.
Yeah, she's very hesitant and very. And so she gets on the motorcycle, and they ride away, and where do they end up?
They go to the pool.
Now, why would they be at the pool, Darren? This seems very strange.
Well, you know, I don't. Here we go.
Because he was the boy that she rescued from drowning during the opening scene. You didn't see that revelation coming, did you?
John.
Gasp.
Who knew? Now, but here's a couple of strange things from that. Why did he really have to have a knife and pull it out?
I don't know. Oh, no, he had the knife to get into the pool and turn the lights on, I think, right? Because like they were breaking and entering. They were going into the pool after hours, so he had to like turn on the lights and get into the pool, so he used the knife to like jimmy the lock.
Oh, that I didn't see. I just saw him pull out a giant knife, and I was just like, oh, yeah, he
And then you got
parents.
Scared and hid behind the couch. And
no, I was just like, maybe this is going to end sooner than I was thinking it was going to end, and in a completely different way.
It ends with just Harlan Williams knifing everybody else in the cast. Yeah.
It goes
Sister Christian, and that gets really hard.
Motorhead.
Sister Christian, now the time is
Yeah. It goes dark.
Yeah.
So Harlan reveals himself to be the kid that Mary saved. Because
he has
ago.
The same
but
distinctive birthmark.
How did he reveal
birthmark?
It if he can't even talk?
He's
he
got the birthmark.
His birthmark
thingy.
That looks like
no,
shit.
She's like, Slater, you have to talk to me. Or whatever she said.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it turns out he has a...
I watched this scene like 3 hours ago, and you already remember it much better than
was,
I do.
It was so wooden. It was almost like a... Nicolas Cage kind of acting style.
Almost, yeah, because he's playing it. He's like a comedian, but he's playing it straight. Yeah, so the reason he never talked about the movie is that he has a stutter, and he'd rather people think he's like some dangerous, silent, you know, thug than actually speak, and they hear him stutter and make fun of him.
But Darren, what happened to his parents for real?
Well, Natty, they were killed by hammerhead sharks.
I can't deal with this like, movie.
And it's like, yeah, that's
this is not a good movie, you guys.
This is a really bad movie. Wow, and I like you guys, but I don't like that you made me watch this
movie. I'm sorry.
I didn't make you.
I officially apologize.
Wow.
I was not looking forward to this movie. This is one I was kind of dreading because it was a character I was just so on at best.
Right.
So I didn't think it was a good.
So you didn't have. So that's the weird thing too is. I went into this movie with zero expectations.
Yeah.
And I've found a lot of times when I go into a movie with zero expectations, there's so much money and there's so many people behind making movies that a lot of times I'll be pleasantly surprised.
Right.
This underwhelmed my lack of expectations.
It didn't.
It went
you
under,
had no expectations and it did not meet your
it
expectations.
It went under my zero expectations.
It dug a hole and went under
it was,
those expectations.
This. I think it was worse than I was anticipating, too.
Wowee. All right.
I would say this, if I had to rank them, the SNL movies we've done so far, I would only put It's Pat below this.
So this is worse than Night at the Roxbury?
It is worse than Night at the Roxbury. It is, it is worse than Stuart Saves His Family.
Wow.
This, I would say, is the Greta Van Fleet of SNL movies.
Oh, Jesus.
Wow.
This is not good, you guys.
This is getting
we're reaching near the end, so I feel like oh, thank God. Just for the sake of everyone listening, we should wrap it up.
Right. So
Mary gets home late.
Yeah.
Grandma's still up. And
we have
says,
another reveal.
Oh yeah.
The grandmother used to be in Gypsy on Broadway. She used to be a dancer herself.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the whole dancing thing.
I may be jumping
ahead. Was a family
again.
Treat?
Yeah.
No, I think you're but the grandmother does say let's practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they practice.
She gets a big group of her misfit friends together. Yeah.
She does her pratfall thing, hits television. Television falls, kills the dog.
Right.
Who goes to Jesus Farrell.
Right.
Who says, they need you. You have to go back.
Resurrects.
I'll see you another time, puppy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the dog.
Not as funny as, like, say, when Baxter comes back in Anchorman.
Yeah.
No.
There's zero. Yeah.
I admit, I don't get why they put that in. It makes.
It's just a weird random thing. Although I did like Will Ferrell as Jesus. I enjoyed the scenes where he did it.
I feel like it should have been about him.
Yeah. And they put a cool glowing effect on, and it looked really good. Those were probably the funniest moments of the movie for me. Jesus Ferrell.
That should be the name of the movie. Superstar.
Wasn't he the lead singer of Jane's Addiction?
Lollapuzzoota. And then Belinda Carlisle's song comes on again.
Right.
And we get a montage of all of the people from the special ed class.
All the guys.
And coming together.
Yeah.
Like, gotta have a montage.
They put on a show.
Even Rocky had a montage.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you did there. Montage.
And they're all practicing the dance. They're all practicing the dance moves for the
big talent show. And so then the big talent show happens, and Sky and Avion go out and dance, but Sky makes it clear that even though they're dancing, they're still not together.
Right.
And then dance to Bambalaya, which is a great song. I forgot how much I like that song.
But before that, I did write this down. Howard Feinstein, dressed in a police outfit. This is another weird reference.
Yeah. Right,
does
right.
a Full Monty joke. Yeah. The movie Full Monty, where he starts...
Another reference.
Which came out like 1996, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
It's like a 3-year-old movie at this point.
Hey, they were living in the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
They do that a lot. They like reference, like they do like a lot of things where just referencing the thing that was big in the pop culture is enough to make you laugh. There's no joke for it. It's like, hey, remember Jiggy?
Yeah, we're just going to point it out. And we're going to keep going.
Hey,
one
remember
of those,
that thing.
Yeah, we're going to, here's the joke.
Hey, Tom Green, remember him? And that's it.
And then they're doing their big production number at the end.
Right, the big song and dance.
No, well, she's out there by herself.
Right.
It starts off really meek.
Yeah.
And then Tom Green yells.
Yeah, I think he called it like the R word.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. I'm learning.
I like it.
We're learning.
But then she starts to sing a little bit louder, and then the curtains open.
Right.
And there's a white scrim. And behind that you get the shadows of the people from the class.
Right.
Yeah.
The reason I'm talking about this in such detail is because I want it out of my head.
Okay.
And I'm trying to exercise these demons.
Sure.
I want this out
of my... I understand. That's a good impulse.
Out of my brain.
Yeah.
And then they start to dance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we have Slater leaving town.
Motorcycle.
Yeah, but then Jesus Ferrell comes back.
I actually liked this because it felt like it was like a neat bit of quirk where he's on his motorcycle leaving, and it says, "What was it? You're now
leaving Bessemer Heights."
But then, like 20 feet later, it was now entering Bessemer Heights.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And then he turns the motorcycle around and he comes back in, and it says, "Now entering Bessemer Heights."
Right.
So he's stuck in this weird little
loop.
Which I was like, well, maybe if the movie had more of this kind of quirk, I would like it more, because it just seemed like it wasn't a real thing, and everything else was so real that I don't know.
I see what you're saying.
But then Ferrell Jesus shows up.
Yeah. And then he kind of tells, Slater, go back,
Right.
You know you like her, just go back and
just go back.
Kiss
man.
The girl.
Ah!
Kiss the girl. Yeah. So then Slater goes back, and then Mary and the rest of the kids are doing their little dance number, and of course one of the nuns bumps into the record player.
The record player, and it speeds up the tempo.
History repeating itself.
Oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And we forgot that before the thing, Mary had gone to confession, and she's done this a couple of times in the movie, but she said, "I've made the sin of selfishness." And he's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, she said, "I just want tonight to go okay and for everyone to be okay and be safe." Or something like that. I forget how it all worked out.
You know what she should have talked about in the confessional? I've written a bad screenplay.
Wow. Jeez. Oh, are you raising the roof?
Oh, he didn't say that. He said, "You suck." That's what Tom Green said.
He said one of those.
I agree with Tom Green.
He said that during the audition.
Oh, I apologize. I apologize.
Tom Green makes some good points.
So then she starts singing more confidently, and then... the nun and the record player, and
okay,
yeah. So then,
they dance really fast. Then she falls, but then Will Ferrell Jesus comes up again and says,
and Jane says, "I'm done with Sergio."
What?
No, wait. Okay, no, sorry, I'm getting mixed up.
Where's that from?
Jesus Ferrell.
Jesus Ferrell says, "Oh, get up, Mary, you can do it." And then she gets up and she completes the dance, and it goes over big, and she wins the whole. dance contest, and it's awesome, and Avion gets all PO'd
now,
and stomps away.
During their big dance thing at the end, they start out, they do the robot, like, during the cafeteria dance scene. And then they go into, like, that synchronized swimming move where you all line up, and then you
put
your arm...
But they're on a stage.
They're on a stage, so when you do that in synchronized swimming, you go into water. So basically, they slammed into the stage.
Yeah. Slam dance. You never heard of that? Hey.
This movie should have ended with everyone in traction.
Great. Wow.
I feel like I was in traction.
Yeah.
All right, so...
Jesus, I forgot. Pharrell Jesus said, "Get up, Mary. You can do it." And when he said, "You can do it," I was like, "Oh, is that a callback to the SNL?"
Rob Schneider?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe.
Because he was like, "You can do it." And it felt
I think they'd done the water boy by this point, but that was sometime in the 90s, I think.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, very much so. All right, so so she wins. Sky Corrigan's like, "Oh, you do have moves." So she gets her kiss from Sky Corrigan, the one thing she's always wanted, and... He's not a good kisser.
Okay, why is she the only one who wins the contest? Because she's dancing in a group.
I thought about that too.
But she's the lead.
I mean, it started out as just her, but everybody else was dancing just as much as her.
Yeah, but
she was the lead.
That's right. So, you know.
She
gets the big prize. So she kisses Sky, and she, you know, it's not what she thought it'd be. And
she's like, "Oh, that's okay."
What she wins is the Catholic Teen Magazine. They name now the organization who's sponsoring this. But when Evian comes up and Mary Kate had a good line where she's like, you know, "Hey, I'm sorry. You must not have known that you were going up against a superstar."
Ooh. See?
And callback.
I did keep track. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I counted 5 superstars throughout the movie. There was a potential 6.
Wow. Right. Just so you remember the name of the movie.
Yeah, well, you got to get it in there.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's like they said Ghostbusters a bunch of times, so you know you're watching Ghostbusters.
It's very true.
It's a rule of threes or fives or whatever.
15s.
Yeah. So, of course, she kisses Farrell, and it's not great. And, of course, you know, Slater comes in, and she realizes, he's the one for me. He's the one, and they kiss, and then there's fireworks and everything. Everything's magic.
Everything's magical. But we forgot, in the back, we also have the Devil Girl. We have the stutterer guy.
Oh yeah,
who kisses the?
He kisses Howard Owen, who's like the OCD guy, and he kisses
him once, and he's like, "Did you just kiss me, bro?
You gay?"
And then he goes something like, "Yeah, and I'm gonna kiss you 4 more times."
Yeah, like I'm 5 times gayer than you. So Owen comes out as gay, and he kisses.
So that's another weird.
That's a thing.
But then
you don't care because it's not like these characters have been especially developed in the movie
at all. Like they were
at all.
If she was one note. Then they were less than a note.
They were a quarter note.
Oh, I like that. And then the devil girl, who I don't remember her name.
Maria. She was like the goth girl.
Yep. Yeah. So she gets the fake addict, who we didn't even mention because it was such a worthless character.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
What was the point of him?
He's pretending like he's drunk and he's a drug addict, obviously knows nothing about.
Yeah. I think that
so he doesn't even fake it well, and everybody calls him out on it.
On their whiteboard, they said, "All right, in the special ed class, we need X number of students to make it look like there's enough students."
Right.
So we have this guy, this guy, this guy, and he was just like the last guy they came up
with. Yeah, he was just like a seat filler.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And so what is her name again?
Who, Maria, the goth,
Maria, so
the goth girl.
She like,
yeah.
So the first two kiss, and then she like takes his head and pushes it.
Yeah, because
downwards.
Giving her oral stuff
on stage.
At a Catholic school.
Yeah.
In front of everyone.
Whatever, man.
In front of the staff and the student body.
Yeah,
and
so that made sense as
but,
well.
Hey,
whatever,
we got
man, it's the weekend. Let's party, right?
Yeah, but we got that joke in there, so.
And then, so what was it? So Mary and Slater kiss?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fireworks. But then we cut to scene where she's back out at the tree.
Yeah.
And she's been telling the entire
movie.
To a tree.
Yeah, and she's like,
I guess this was all in her head?
No.
Is this a sixth sense? She was just relaying it.
Yeah.
Oh, that
sort of thing.
See, maybe it was operating higher.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I remember she was
maybe
like,
not a sixth sense.
She was like
thing,
breaking up with the tree, and then
she's like, you know, it's this thing. Yeah, yeah. This thing happened. Oh, what do you mean? Oh, I can't. You know, I'm with Slater now.
Right.
And then
she ends up making up with the tree.
Maybe one
making out
one more for the road type of thing. And is that a thing that happens? like when couples, so if you're dating somebody and you go to break up with them because you're with someone else, and you go say to them, hey, I'm breaking up with you.
Yeah.
But one more for the road. I don't feel like that exists.
It's happened, I guess.
I know no one in this room has had that happen.
Oh, wow.
And I'm including myself.
Shots fired.
My reputation precedes me.
I would be more offended if that were not accurate. But
I mean, I've heard people do that. They have breakup nookie.
Hey,
I've heard that's a thing.
Breakups to makeups.
Yeah, that's all we do.
Well, now I'm just thinking back, and okay. Well, that's something for off air.
Okay.
Oh, Patreon, get on bonus content. So then that's the movie.
Calling it a movie is very charitable.
Wow, you really very charitable.
I think the nun was standing there.
Watching
again.
Yeah,
and I feel like she had this smile of joy. And in my head, I was just like, oh, is a natural progression now that the nun is going to date the tree?
Oh.
I catch it on the rebound.
See, I like how...
so the tree's single now.
Yeah,
how throughout this movie, we've all anticipated, this is what they're going to do now. And every idea we've had has been better than what they actually did in the movie.
Yeah, it was anticlimactic.
If the last scene of the movie, after watching that, was just the nun leaning against the tree... Or just saying,
call me.
So.
And having,
call me.
Having an awakening.
I'm not going to pump my prowess as comedic writer, but that would have been very simple.
So we've got a little bit of reviews and trivia. There's some review excerpts on Rotten Tomatoes here.
Oh, Rotten Tomatoes, where it scored a 32%.
Yeah, and it has an audience score of 60%.
Which I do not believe.
What the
I think
F?
That is an algorithm
that is
broken.
No, anybody who rated this movie highly is wrong, and they need to be rounded up and put into camps.
Oh my God, wow, good Lord.
I have to ask, on this podcast, is it normally so good cop, bad cop?
I mean, no, there are some movies that
we agree more than we disagree, I would say.
I mean, for the most, there's some movies where I'm a little bit harsh. Like, It's Pad is, I can't find anything redeeming. I've gone in on that. There's nothing redeeming about It's Pad.
Yeah, It's Pad is definitely still the worst that we've seen. This, I would say, is the next worst.
Yeah, this is,
this was not good. I cannot find much of anything to recommend this movie, except maybe the Go-Go song at the beginning. I enjoyed hearing that.
So just get a best of Go-Go's CD.
Yes, it is. It is on the compilation Beyond the Valley of the Go-Go's.
Ooh.
So the song is called Beautiful. It's a nice song.
Beautiful.
I'll also recommend the Go-Go's 2001 reunion album, God Bless the Go-Go's. That is a good solid rock album. I listened to a couple songs of that before I came out.
All right. So, you can read the...
I got some Rotten Tomatoes here. Let's see. Chris Gore from Film Threat says, I've seen this sketch numerous times on SNL. It isn't funny at 5 minutes. At 90 minutes, it's unbearable.
Ooh.
Let's see.
Okay. If you want, I can read some tweets we got about it.
Yeah.
Because I put the word out, as always, saying we're going to review it. Ruby the Rube said, she's just curious as to what we think of MKG sketches in general. It said, like a lot of the recurring sketches from the Will Ferrell era, the fans are especially divided. Mario Lanza, at Mario J. Lanza, said that he hated them. He hated them at the time. Can't imagine I'd like them anymore now. I like Molly Shannon's intensity and her pratfalls, but in general, I really wasn't a fan of any of her characters. She was just too loud for me. And then I think we kind of go into... It's kind of a discovery I found. In that Will Ferrell era, a lot of the characters are just very loud. Will Ferrell screamed a lot in his sketch.
Get off the shed.
Yeah, get off the shed. And Sherry O'Terry was always screaming.
Simmer down now.
Yeah, and Chris Kattan was loud. Molly Shannon was just loud. And a lot of loud characters in that era.
Just screaming by itself is not funny.
Yeah, just if I say this, this punchline louder, it'll be funnier. And I guess for a while it worked, but it was just loud.
Loud is funny.
Yeah, and also Bill Brasky at Bill Brasky 2620 said, I think the movie is sweet and probably does the best job of expanding a character's universe, as it were. It's not laugh out loud funny, but as you've no doubt gathered so far, none of these are, except for Wayne's World 1 and 2 and MacGruber. So that's what we got. People are tweeting at.
No, I would disagree with that. I would say both Blues Brothers and Wayne's World did a much better job of expanding the characters' worlds.
Okay.
So.
All right.
And, yeah. And those are characters you actually want to spend an hour and a half with. Mary Catherine Gallagher. Even at 5 minutes, I wasn't too fond of spending time with her.
But I will say, so, kind of to the point of them being loud and her dedication to the character, I did appreciate how all in she was.
Yes.
And so, yeah, like, I'm trying to find, silver lining. She definitely commits. That is her character. She's in it. But it's, just no one that I want to watch for that amount of time.
There's not too much trivia about this movie.
Yeah, I didn't find anything.
IMDb. There's no
scathing scandal.
One during filming. Director Bruce McCullough asked that Karen Dwyer, who played Summer, who was like the goth girl, I believe, remove her belly piercing, as Bruce believed that Catholic schoolgirls shouldn't be pierced. Coincidentally, Dwyer did in fact attend a Catholic school during her school years.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It does not say whether or not her belly was pierced at the time.
Oh. Okay.
But the other only mildly... here's something interesting. Skye Corrigan, Will Ferrell's part, Artie Lang and David Faustino from Married with Children both auditioned for the part.
That's odd.
So I guess they were really casting against type for the hunky school guy.
That's a wide net. Artie Lang
and David Faustino.
Did Bud David Faustino ever... Did
I
he have a career?
Never seen him in anything. I have literally not seen him in anything.
Bud Bundy was his apex.
Yeah.
And
Grandmaster B, that was it.
Also,
where are you going to go after Grandmaster B?
This is mildly interesting. It was the final film appearance for both Glynis Johns, who played Grandma, and Jean Howell, who played Maura McDaniels. So that's right. This movie killed two people.
Wow.
Wait, Maura McDaniels. Who is she?
I have no idea.
Character name? Maura McDaniels?
I don't know who that is. I'm looking for her on the cast list on IMDb, and I'm not seeing her.
Guys, call
her. There's not a picture of her on her profile on IMDb. Let's see.
Does she even exist?
Guys,
call in if you know more. McDaniel.
Okay, she was apparently an older lady because her career is going back to. Her career started in 1954. So she was an older lady
of a certain age.
Yeah, okay. Don't ask me who the heck Maura McDaniels was, though. Okay. She was born in 1927.
Ooh, all right.
So she would have been in her 70s.
All right, so that's the movie, guys. Yeah. So it was definitely something.
Yep.
Okay. It was a movie.
Wait a minute.
I was so happy that it was free for me to watch.
There you go. See? Silver lining.
Okay.
What's going on?
Well, now I'm very confused, because this movie came out in 1999. Jean Howell's death date is listed on IMDb as July 23rd, 1996, when she was 68. So was she in a clip of a movie or something?
So maybe who we saw was her ghost.
No, there was an older couple, but I can't. I know I saw them, but I can't place in my head where I saw them.
How do you die in 1996 and then star in a movie in 1999?
Her ghost, maybe, like I just said.
Maybe
man.
It took that long to make it. No.
Yeah, it's. All 3 years worth of effort were obviously in this. Okay.
All right. So, Leah, let's wrap this baby up. Because are you guys okay? You both seem like
this might be the movie that broke me.
Oh,
I don't know.
No. We got two more movies to finish.
I know. And
what are your other movies you're going to watch?
We got The Ladies' Man coming up next week.
And then we're wrapping it up with MacGruber, which Darren swears by. I've not seen all of MacGruber. I'm looking forward to seeing MacGruber.
Yay. MacGruber. Okay,
but you know we should have we do have to backtrack a little bit because we had a thing from last week that came up.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Oh wow.
Yes, and of course that went away on my Facebook as soon as I brought that up. So,
but yeah, so basically on if you listened to last week's episode when we talked on that to Roxbury, we went off on a tangent and John mentioned that Chaz Palminteri played Fat Tony on The Simpsons.
Right. And my friend Mike Shirley wrote and pointed out that I was getting mixed up.
Yeah.
That it was not Chaz Palminteri who plays Fat Tony on The Simpsons. It is, in fact, Joe Mantegna.
Yes. The other Italian actor.
Which which I knew on some level, but I forgot last week because I was speaking off the cuff.
John, is that racist?
Wow.
I'll just give myself a little problematic bell.
No, because we are in New Jersey.
Just in case. So.
That's the matter for you.
I attribute it to it. We have to turn off the air conditioning in the studio to record. So it gets up to about 90 degrees by the end of us recording. So by that point,
and
I was not
with
thinking
me in here, it's up to at least 107.
That's right.
Ooh, hot stuff.
Looking for some hot mouth, baby, this year.
Also, this would not be as much of a problem if Chaz Palminteri would put his name on more things.
So you hear that, Chaz? Do that.
I'm calling you out, Chaz.
Wow.
Wow, we got beef.
So I just own my mistake. You own your mistake in Night at the Roxbury.
Wow.
No, actually, you're very good.
I hope you like your knees tremble.
Be ashamed if something happened to them.
Yeah. Oh, no.
What kind of shoes you got on, huh? Look like you need some new ones made out of maybe some of this cement.
I'm sorry, Mr. Palminteri.
This guy. I
quite like A Boy's Life. Oh. That is a good movie.
Oh. He was in that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No. Don't make me question that.
Are you thinking about De Niro now?
Oh, no.
No.
All right. No, I didn't see. I never saw A Boy's Life. I just know De Niro.
Chaz Palminteri is like the guy who wrote the movie, and he might have directed it. And now I have to look him up on IMDb.
Oh, if you were thinking about De Niro, I'm going to laugh.
This is really exciting.
I feel like not.
The wheels on the bus fall off.
I never seen A Boy's Life. You could be right.
Yeah, so why are you questioning me?
Because I like to throw monkey wrenches
into
things.
You like to throw me under the bus.
Yes, right under.
I will say also, and I doubt he'll reply, but who knows, that I did tweet Tom Green.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
And I said that we're recording a podcast with you guys today.
Yeah.
And that we're talking about the Superstar movie and wanted to know about his salad scene. Was it improvised?
Oh, wow.
Oh.
I wanted to do that last night, and I kind of forgot.
We'll have to report on that last week. Okay, so...
Because Pig has actually been on the Tom Green Show a couple of times.
Really? What? I did not know this. Oh, wow.
He has better credits than I do.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Pig has better credits than I do. All right? So that is very frustrating.
Wow, does Pig need like an opener or something like that?
has Pig talked about this on the Bumper podcast?
No, because we don't want to advertise other people's shows on our podcast.
Even
my own shows.
Wow.
Well, we'll have to get like Pig as a guest star on this show sometime, so he can give us the full scoop.
Yeah, we'll talk to his people.
A Bronx Tale, by the way, came out in 1993, directed by Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
But Chaz Palminteri wrote the screenplay based on his play.
Yeah, you said A Boy's Life, not A Bronx Tale.
He definitely said A Boy's Life.
Yeah, I did say
A Boy's
Life.
Whoa!
This is what happens when I try to recall things off the top of my head. This is why I keep windows open
on
the laptop.
Which is so weird, because neither of you have anything on the top of your heads.
Oh!
That was a bald joke.
That is baldest of you, sir. No, I won't stand for it. There you go. Bald is beautiful, people. Don't let Natty's anti-bald stance.
Can I tell you that one time, this was within the last 10 years, my wife, out of nowhere, for no reason, said, you know, I think if you ever go bald, I might have to leave you. Is a phrase that my wife actually said to me.
She just said that out of the blue, apropos of nothing.
Apropos of nothing. We're walking around, and then that thought popped in her head and jumped out of her mouth.
She said jokingly, right?
No, she just said it.
Oh.
Yeah, that makes you think less of her, doesn't it?
I'm not going to say that on air.
But here's the thing.
Yeah, I don't want to commit.
If you press her on that, I'm sure she would not remember it. But I have a folder.
But it's stuck in your head.
I have a folder of things.
Yep.
Just waiting to come out.
You have a dossier on her?
This is me. It's a steel dossier on her.
So, we'll unpack that later.
Yeah, that's the podcast. Natty, is there anything you want to plug?
Where can people follow you on the social media?
Get more of this witty banter.
Please follow me at Natty Bumper Car on the Twitter and on the Instagram and wherever you may find me. NattyBumperCar.com is where my website is. And you can find all kinds of things. Web comics, cartoons, the Bumper Podcast. Lots of fun. My middle name is Content.
Yes.
And then at the end of my name. So the opposite of a surname, what goes at the end of a name? Whatever comes after my name. So if my middle name is Content,
instead of Esquire, it would say.
That thing. Right. Is that no one cares about or listens to or watches.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So Natty Bumper Car Wait, Natty Content Bumper Car.
Natty Bumper Content.
Well, let's not confuse them on the actual address. It's Natty Bumper Car.
NattyBumperCar.com.
Yeah, everybody's trying to write this down, crossing it out. It's like, when's he going to say the right thing?
No, just NattyBumperCar.com.
The point you're making is you're a Renaissance man and you generate a lot of content.
I make a lot. This is my third podcast today.
Wow.
Wow.
Jeez. Yeah.
Kid's good. You're good.
Are you going to go record another podcast after this?
No, but I do have a show tonight.
Oh, nice.
Yes,
nice,
at my standing Sunday home at Tierney's in Montclair.
All right, yes.
And then actually Darren and I are going to be on a show on August 9th.
Oh, that's right.
The Decomposition Podcast.
With our best pals, the Decomposition Podcast, which is a phenomenal podcast where they take hit songs and then they break them down. They decompose them and they find out the stories behind them and they go through the lyrics. And it's a real treat. Where is that at?
That is at the Old Canal Inn in Nutley.
Yes.
It'll be August 9th. Yes. Yep. So be there. And listen to me on the Decomposition Podcast, too. I did like 3 episodes. It's great.
Do you have any other podcasts?
I do. I'll talk.
Yeah, plug The Virgin Chronicles. All right, go for it.
I have a podcast called The Virgin Chronicles. It's me and my buddy Evan Morgenstern. We do it out in Brooklyn, and we talk about people's first times. You know, it doesn't have to be about the first time you had sex. It could be about the first time, your first job, or your first person you kissed, or your first heartbreak, or first time you got drunk. Any first time story, Natty Bumper.
A lot of first times, yeah.
Natty Bumper has been on it, so you listened to that episode.
It was a fun episode. I'll tell you, my first time that I was on that podcast, my sweet children and I, and wife, she was there too, we were at the place, and we waited for 20 minutes in the middle of Brooklyn.
Yeah, I was running late.
And my children were like, what have you drug us to? Why does this always happen? Why?
Yeah, the place wasn't open. The guy was getting... We all got there late and...
I'm just messing. It was a great experience.
And if you want to follow me and stuff, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Darren Credible. That's D-A-R-I-N Credible.
Yeah, and you can follow me on Twitter at Trumbull Comic. And I don't have any other podcast to plug at the moment. I booked 2 other podcast guest appearances today.
All right, there you go.
That's good.
But that's good. A friend of mine, you know, was like, hey, do you want to do these episodes? And I was like, yes, I do. So that was, I'm going to be on Cheerscast again, which I plugged last week. So my friend Ryan Daly. And we're going to talk about Cheers episodes. I don't know when I'm recording those, sometime in the next week. And I don't know when the heck they're going to go up. But I'll let you know here.
Well, guys, thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun.
Thanks for doing it.
Thank you for coming out.
It may not have seemed like it because I didn't enjoy the movie. But I enjoyed the whole process.
Yes.
And it's always fun to hang out with you guys. You guys are awesome.
It's all about the journey.
We're sorry we did not give you a more entertaining movie to watch. But maybe at some point when we revisit some other movie starring Saturday Night Live people... Yes. We can fix that.
I love that. And I forgot, at a point when I was watching the movie, I watched it last night, my puppy, she's 20 weeks old, she was on the couch, and she actually vomited. And I don't know for a fact that it had anything to do with the movie.
Mm. Was it at the same time that Evian vomited in the movie?
Oh. It might have been a bulimia thing. Maybe my dog is bulimic.
Oh. Did she eat Bugles immediately afterwards?
Constantly. Wow. Hands always, paws always in the bag.
Oy. See, right. So this movie makes animals sick and has killed 2 people. Yep.
Yes.
That's what we learned.
And that's where we are.
Yep. So if you want to follow the show, please follow us on Twitter at SNL Nerd Show. We also have a Facebook page that's just SNL Nerds.
Patreon.
Go to non-productive.com. Please contribute and you can get some bonus content and help keep the show going. And check out other shows on the non-productive network, non-productive.com.
Yeah, they got a podcast. They got a podcast about comic books, trailers, nerdy stuff. Joe Conte has a podcast all about the Honeymooners. Check that out.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So, but we will be back next week. We were going to be covering
The
Ladies Man, starring Tim Meadows. Mm-hmm. So
with another guest.
So we will see if. This goes up, or if this continues the downward trend, or
who knows?
It's going to be.
It's a roller coaster.
It's a roller. Life is a highway.
Who knows? Who knows? And I want to ride it all night long. We'll see you next week, guys. Bye,
guys.
Bye.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.